This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Qul inna salati wa nusuki wa mahyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alameen la sharika lah
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things, and no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land, and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
For headlines, the White House says a stronger U.S. military presence in Eastern Europe and severe economic harms will await Russia if it moves to invade Ukraine. From lockdowns to mandatory jabs, countries in Europe are thinking of ways to prevent the new Omicron variant from spreading. Plus, Israel launches several missiles into a port city in Syria. The details just ahead. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, rhetoric ratcheting up between the U.S. and Russia just hours ahead of a meeting between their leaders. Washington now says Moscow will have to prepare for a stronger U.S. military presence in Eastern Europe should it move to attack Ukraine. A senior White House official says Washington would give a positive response to Eastern European allies requesting additional U.S. troops and military hardware to counter any threat from Russia. He also says Russia will face severe economic consequences in case of invading Ukraine. The Kremlin says it's not expecting any significant breakthrough in the upcoming talks between President Vladimir Putin and his U.S. counterpart, Joe Biden. The two leaders are set to hold a video call in the coming hours for a conversation that will include several issues. The White House says it's concerned over the Russian military buildup near Ukraine, warning that massive sanctions are on the way.
It's not about threats. It's about conveying that the right path forward here is through diplomacy. In the meantime, on financial sanctions, we have consulted significantly with our allies and believe we have a path forward that would impose significant and severe harm on the Russian economy. You can call that a threat. You can call that a fact. You can call that preparation, whatever you want to call it. But that is something we've talked about publicly, and certainly the president would convey that as well.
Washington and Kiev accuse Moscow of preparing for a large-scale military offensive on Ukraine. But Moscow says NATO is infringing upon Russia with an eastward expansion and that the country needs the military buildup to protect itself.
The Russian leadership is extremely concerned about the possibility of large-scale hostilities in the eastern Ukraine, Donbas, and Crimea. There has not been such a level of military threat throughout Russia's modern history. NATO has dismissed Russia's proposal on zones of influence to somehow stabilize the situation. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has rejected a diplomatic dialogue, giving Ukraine carte blanche to withdraw from the Minsk agreements. The situation is more than ever close to a war. The United States has removed all diplomatic and political restrictions, while Ukraine's accession to the North Atlantic Alliance is a red line for Russia.
We are witnessing the expansionism of NATO led by the United States in the territories near Russian borders. That's why President Vladimir Putin is seeking legally binding security guarantees to prevent further destruction of the security system. If that does not work, our retaliatory measures will be harsh and the West will regret the missed opportunity for a deal with Russia.
Things appear to be heading toward a scenario of Russia's complete international isolation, an all-out technology and trade blockade, and an embargo on the purchase of oil and gas. To begin this plan, a military scenario might be implemented in Ukraine.
The NATO leadership understands that they have become weak and there is no unity in sight. They need threats to maintain funding, and they create them by portraying Russia as an aggressor. That's why we do not hear a single word of condemnation from the West against Ukraine's escalation of violence in the East.
The Kremlin understands that passivity only makes things worse. The responsibility for the conflict will remain with Russia, and no one will be interested in the real picture.
It is unpleasant to negotiate with NATO and the US, and talks with Ukraine will not resolve anything because it is completely subordinate to Washington. Russia needs to remember one thing: the Anglo-Saxon respect only force. Russia must continue to strengthen its security and combat capabilities given the unacceptable policies of NATO and the US.
Russia demands legal guarantees since the West has not kept its promise that after the reunification of Germany, NATO would not expand eastward. Further advancement of Western forces and provocations will affect the fundamental security interests of Russia.
If Moscow's legitimate concerns about Ukraine and NATO are not taken into account, Russia will take retaliatory measures to correct the military strategic balance. An alternative to these could be long-term security guarantees on its Western borders. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Several European countries are taking extra measures to stem the surge in COVID-19 infections amid concerns over the new Omicron variant. Italy has tightened curbs on unvaccinated citizens, limiting their access to an array of places and services. A rise in COVID cases in recent weeks has also prompted authorities to make health passes mandatory for all public transport. In Germany, a nationwide lockdown has already started for unvaccinated people. The government is also planning to make jabs compulsory in 2022. The situation in France is also alarming, as the number of cases is increasing rapidly.
The virus spreading fast in our country. With nearly 50,000 cases daily these last few days, we're reaching a level that's higher than what we saw in the previous wave.
The French Prime Minister said it is not yet the time to set limits or impose curfews and lockdowns. Paris, however, put restrictions on Christmas festivities to battle the virus. Elsewhere in Europe, Poland is set to announce a new package of COVID restrictions in response to Omicron ahead of the upcoming Christmas holidays. The Polish Health Ministry reported over 13,000 new COVID cases on Monday. EU employment ministers have agreed to take measures to protect wage levels in the bloc as workers and employers are facing growing uncertainty due to economic pressures. New data shows the gap between the rich and poor in the EU is growing. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
According to a study just published by the European Trade Union Confederation, wage inequality has grown in a majority of EU countries, 14 out of the 27 member states to be precise. The report was released to coincide with a meeting of EU employment ministers. They've agreed on a wage directive designed to protect those on low incomes.
The message coming today on the 6th of December from Brussels is a very positive, encouraging message, especially to those who are still in work poverty.
Millions of people in the EU are working in precarious jobs. Most of them are young adults.
A job well done requires adequate and just pay. This concerns the fundamental respect of people in their work. One of our priorities under the Slovenian presidency was high-quality job creation.
Although the new directive was passed here in the Council, Hungary and Denmark voted against it, while Germany and Austria abstained. Analysts say it's clear there will never be an EU-wide minimum wage. pay systems and economies vary greatly. For example, currently the minimum wage in Bulgaria is €312 a month. In Luxembourg, it is €2,142. Employers are afraid to invest at present due to all of the unknowns surrounding COVID-19, high energy prices, and political uncertainty in some EU nations.
Businesses want certainty. They can't have certainty, but they would like a bit of predictability for investment reasons in particular. And they don't have that at the moment because of these issues that you just mentioned. And they don't know what's around the corner.
Disaster is around the corner for the EU project, experts warn, if the bloc's leaders continue in their failure to deliver greater social justice. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Welcome back. Israel carries out fresh air raids on Syria, targeting the port city of Latakia several times. Syrian defense systems have intercepted several missiles. No casualties have been reported in the incident. Our Damascus correspondent Mohammed Ali joined us earlier with more on the attack.
At about 1:45 a.m. local time here in Syria, explosions were heard in the governorate of Latakia. Later on, about 1:50 a.m., the Syrian state media confirmed that there has been an Israeli attack in which Israel attacked the vicinity of the port of Latakia. We still don't know if there were any casualties. Definitely, there are some, of course, material damages over there. The Syrian state media also said that Syria's air defenses were able to intercept most of the enemy missiles and shoot them down. However, it seems that some Israeli missiles did hit the vicinity of the port of Latakia, because some images were published by locals on the internet showing some smoke rising and coming out from the vicinity of the port of Latakia.
Saudi Arabia has carried out fresh airstrikes on the Yemeni capital Sana'a as part of the kingdom's intensified onslaught against its southern neighbor. There have been no reports on the possible casualties or material damage. The attacks are the latest in a bout of Saudi airstrikes on Yemen. Saudi warplanes have conducted over 130 strikes on Sana'a and other major Yemeni cities over the past 5 days. In response to the Saudi escalation, Yemeni armed forces carried out a retaliatory operation deep inside the kingdom hours ago. Hussein al-Bukhaiti is a political commentator. He says the United States funds and provides logistics to Saudi Arabia in its war on Yemen.
And today Saudi has conducted the four airstrike, two on Jarban area south of Sana'a, and one airstrike is reported that hit Sana'a airport, and one airstrike have targeted the Atan mountain. Most of those areas, Saudi has been targeting them with hundreds of airstrikes from the beginning of the war. But I think that the Saudi, actually, that they are showing that they will continue targeting Sana'a city, targeting Yemeni civilians, despite all those announcements from the United States that they are not will not continue to support Saudi Arabia or sell weapons. But we see, on the other hand, that the Saudi is still getting all type of equipment from United States. As Saudi is losing the war, even though we have seen the latest condemnation from many countries toward the latest attack against Saudi Arabia about 5 hours ago, even though there isn't any report of a single civilian casualty. But on the other hand, we see when Saudi conducted any airstrike on Yemen, when they kill civilians, they have killed more than 18,000 Yemeni civilians, most of them children. We haven't seen a single condemnation, neither from the United States or UK or France or any other country, and as well the United Nations.
Iran's president has reiterated his country's support for peace and security in the Persian Gulf region. Ibrahim Raisi said Israel is pursuing its co-opted sinister goals in the region and turning every foothold into a tool for expansionism. He made the remarks at a meeting with the visiting UAE National Security Advisor. Raisi said friendly relations with neighboring countries are Iran's priority in its foreign policy. He stressed that nothing should hinder boosting cooperation among regional countries. The Iranian president insisted that bilateral relations in the region must not be influenced by outside powers. The UAE's Sheikh Tahnoon bin Zayed Al Nahyan hailed the meetings as a turning point in the ties between the two countries. He said that his country is ready to expand bilateral cooperation with Iran. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says the illegal presence of foreign forces in West Asia, including in Syria, is detrimental to regional security and stability. Raisi made the remark in a meeting with Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Mekdad in Tehran. He stressed that Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity must be preserved. Raisi noted that Syria is at the forefront of resistance against Israel, hailing the nation's resistance against the regime's acts of aggression. Earlier, Mekdad met with his Iranian counterpart, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, who described Israel as the root cause of insecurity in the region.
Regarding the sporadic attacks of the Zionist regime against Syria, I stress that the fake and terrorist Israeli regime is the root cause of insecurity in the West Asia region.
Amir Abdullahian also touched upon Tehran-Damascus relations and described them as strategic. The Iranian top diplomat said his country has a comprehensive plan for the reconstruction of Syria. He said Iran is ready to provide the war-torn country with technical and engineering services. Iran says the draft proposals it has offered to the participants in the Vienna talks do not cover anything beyond the terms of the 2015 nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA. Hossein Amir Abdullahian has called on the other parties to stop what he called playing the blame game. He says he has told the European Union's foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, that reports about Iran enriching uranium at a 90% purity level are false. Iran's top diplomat was referring to critical comments from British, French, German, and U.S. officials about the proposals Iran offered during the seventh round of talks that went into recess on Friday. Tehran and the remaining signatories to the accord are expected to pick up where they left off in Vienna later this week. Afghanistan is being hit by drought, economic and displacement crises deteriorating by the day. With the World Bank donors expected to meet soon, Afghan people have pinned hope on them to take some practical steps to alleviate the financial problems of the war-ravaged country. Rahmatullah Bokhwan reports from Kabul.
The World Bank spokesman has announced that donors to the Afghanistan Reconstruction Trust Fund have agreed to decide about the transfer of funds to humanitarian aid agencies by December 10th. In the meantime, people in Afghanistan complaining about the ongoing crisis in their country call on the donors to let the flow of aid and unfreeze the blocked assets.
I expect the donors to stick to their promises. What are they waiting for? We have lots of problems, including poverty and unemployment. Everyone will starve if no aid is sent to Afghanistan.
The world countries have always said that they are after helping us. The situation is worsening as the winter is around the corner. We hope that the World Bank donors help us get out of this disaster by sending humanitarian aid.
Economical experts say that however the aid would be helpful, but the international community, in cooperation with the Taliban, must seek other stable approaches for Afghanistan's economy, rather than relying on temporary programs.
The Taliban should show flexibility against the international community's request to gain trust so that the aid could be handed over to the new government in Afghanistan. The transfer of the frozen assets can be very fruitful amid the current poverty that the Afghans are struggling with.
This comes as the UN bodies and aid agencies are calling for more urgent assistance as winter bites. World Food Program says that it needs $2.6 billion to ramp up life-saving support to reach 24 million people in 2022. The U.S. has frozen nearly $10 billion in assets of Afghanistan as it tries to keep the Taliban away from accessing the money. The U.S. sanctions on the Taliban have led to a wave of hunger and poverty in Afghanistan, pushing a large portion of the people to the brink of a catastrophe. Afghans now hope that donor countries agree to extend a helping hand. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Well, that's your world news for now. Stay tuned.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it, and leave no grief unless Thou takes it away, and leave no enemy, and leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names, in the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger, and I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O patron of beneficence.
In the limelight.
Exiled American whistleblower Edward Snowden, whose leaked documents revealed that in 2007 the Israeli regime was flagged as a top espionage threat against the U.S. government, went further, saying in July that NSO Group's industry should not exist. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jessica Corbett, journalist. This article is titled "Spyware Created by Israeli Regime Firm Used to Hack U.S. Officials iPhones. Stay tuned for more. Multiple news outlets revealed recently that Apple notified at least 11 U.S. State Department officials that their iPhones were recently hacked by an unknown party or parties with a spyware developed by the private Israeli regime firm NSO Group. The bombshell, first reported by Reuters, comes after Apple sued NSO Group last month in an effort to protect iPhone users from its Pegasus spyware, which the Israeli regime company claims to only sell to government law enforcement and intelligence agencies, and was the focus of a major reporting project earlier this year. Citing multiple unnamed sources, the Washington Post and Reuters explained that U.S. State Department employees based in Uganda or elsewhere in East Africa were targeted over several months, and the intrusions represent the widest known hacks of U.S. officials through NSO technology. According to the Reuters, a senior Biden administration official speaking on condition he not be identified said the threat to U.S. personnel abroad was one of the reasons the administration was cracking down on companies such as NSO and pursuing new global discussion about spying limits. The official added that they have seen systematic abuse in multiple countries involving NSO's Pegasus spyware. The National Security Council said in a statement reported by the Post that we have been acutely concerned that commercial spyware like NSO Group software poses a serious counterintelligence and security risk to U.S. personnel, which is one of the reasons why the Biden-Harris administration has placed several companies involved in the development and proliferation of these tools on the Department of Commerce's entity list, unquote. Spokespeople for Apple and the State Department declined to comment to Reuters, though the latter also noted that the Commerce Department recently added NSO Group to entity list based on a determination that they developed and supplied the spyware to foreign governments that used this tool to maliciously target government officials, journalists, business people, activists, academics, and embassy workers. While officials at the Ugandan embassy in Washington, D.C. also did not comment, the Zionist regime embassy in the United States Capitol gave a statement to Reuters addressing the fact that the Zionist regime's Ministry of War approves export licenses for the spyware company. The Israeli regime spokesperson said cyber products like the one mentioned are supervised and licensed to be exported to governments only for purposes related to counterterrorism and severe crimes, adding the licensing provisions are very clear, and if these claims are true, it is a severe violation of these provisions. An NSO Group spokesperson told the news agency that the relevant accounts were canceled, and if an internal investigation finds that these actions indeed happened with NSO's tools, the involved customers will be terminated permanently and legal actions will take place. The representative added that the company will cooperate with any relevant government authority and present the full information we will have, unquote. Facebook sued NSO in 2019, claiming the Zionist regime's firm's spyware was used on its messaging service, WhatsApp. Will Cathcart, head of WhatsApp, tweeted recently, "We have been calling NSO a national security threat for years. This reporting shows again why we need to hold NSO accountable for their actions and why governments need to support increased security online." John Scott Railton, a senior researcher at the Citizen Lab at the University of Toronto, also responded to the revelations on Twitter, saying that NSO Group has been an in plain sight national security threat for years, and it is embarrassing that it took a private company to warn them. He asked, "Are their victims not notified by Apple? How about the overseas posted personnel using Androids? Does the State Department know now? And multi-agency investigation is immediately needed." Senator Ron Wyden similarly told the Post that companies that enable their customers to hack U.S. government employees are a threat to America's national security and should be treated as such by the government. Wyden added, "I want to be sure the State Department and the rest of the federal government has the tools to detect hacks and respond to them quickly." Last month, Apple filed a lawsuit in a California-based U.S. district court accusing NSO Group of violating its terms and conditions, as well as state and federal laws. Apple is seeking a permanent injunction to ban the firm from using its devices, services, or software. That suit came after the Pegasus Project, an investigation into NSO's spyware, published in July by more than 80 journalists from 17 media organizations in 10 countries. Coordinated by Forbidden Stories with the technical support of Amnesty International, the project focused on leak of 50,000 phone numbers of potential surveillance targets, including activists, heads of state, and journalists around the world. The Pegasus Project spurred worldwide calls for an immediate moratorium on the export, sale, transfer, and use of such spyware. Exiled American whistleblower Edward Snowden, whose leaked documents revealed that in 2007, the Zionist regime was flagged as a top espionage threat against the U.S. government, went further, saying in July that NSO Group's industry should not exist.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
A Leak in Paradise, Part 2.
Playing golf is important for bankers. It's a good place to talk to clients because no one is going to listen to you on the golf course. The high net worth individuals, you wouldn't meet them in the office. I worked in 8 secrecy jurisdictions: Cayman Islands, BVIs, Bermuda, Guernsey, Jersey, Isle of Man, Mauritius. All of them had golf courses.
Elmer's a very conservative man. He
comes from a very, very poor working class background, and he's made it into the heart of the Swiss establishment, into the financial sector. And he is, or was for years, extremely loyal to the financial sector, unusually loyal, because he has made it out of nowhere to be a somebody. And therefore, I think it was a real shock to him when the system started to let him down, when it behaved badly. And then when he complained about that bad behavior, when it ejected him. So I think he was completely unprepared to play this role of whistleblower. And it's taken him literally years to work out how to do it. And it's really only recently that he's understood how to do it by coming out publicly and trying to build alliances who can help him to get the truth out.
Bank US Bear hired lawyers in LA. And the lawyers in LA represent the Hollywood stars. They're very, very aggressive at trying to basically use abusive process to shut down publications. Their tactic was to spray out subpoenas, spray out legal demands, and move extremely quickly. So they had a court case without even us turning up, and a temporary restraining order was issued, which knocked off the WikiLeaks domain name for about 10 days.
As a grand finale, Elmer leaked the files of two big fish. The candidate for the presidency of Brazil in 2002, Rosana Sani, appeared as a beneficiary of the Coronado Trust based in Guernsey. She was forced to step down from the presidential race after police raided her company and found unexplained cash.
Rudy's business hasn't started up so well, and he's still struggling with it. So this is why I'm here, to earn some money for the family. I live with my mother-in-law, and we share a flat, basically. My social life is very limited. I work long hours, and I go back home late. I'm keeping my costs low and trying not to spend extraordinary amounts of money. What I earn here, about half of it goes back to Mauritius to support Rudy there. At the moment, I'm trying to find a flat for us to bring him back here. I'm now trying to solve a problem, basically, and keeping the family together in any way I can. It's not that I chose to do this. I'm just kind of putting back together a broken glass.
1 hour after this interview, the UK tax authorities were given a CD full of offshore banking data from the Standard Bank. Rudolf Elmer never knew if the data was used by tax authorities. Tax secrecy is just as untransparent as the sacrosanct banking secrecy.
There are very powerful organizations, by which I mean the majority of Swiss banks and British banks, that need to reassure their clients, that is tax evading clients and criminal clients from across the world, that their personal affairs are absolutely secure and hidden behind banking secrecy legislation, not just banking secrecy legislation, but secrecy arrangements of tax havens in the Caribbean, which use trusts and offshore companies.
During my investigation, I was contacted by a friend of Rudolf Elmer. He knows the Swiss banking community and Elmer's personal story very well.
My request to you, David, is please keep my name to yourself. I'm just trying to help you understand the system. Most of the people who are actually trying to bring down the system don't want any publicity. They don't want to be public heroes. You know, most people have a very soft image of Switzerland, but the Swiss bankers can actually destroy people like Rudy to calm down others. That's why they went so bad against Rudy, because they don't want other Rudys. In the view of other employees of the Swiss banks, becoming a Rudy doesn't pay.
Flashback. After his dismissal from Julius Baer in the Cayman Islands in 2003, Elmer returned to Zurich, where he found a new job. With documents in his possession that were incriminating to the bank, he posed a threat to Julius Baer,
and the bank hired up to 10 private detectives to watch him.
That's the house we were living in. And I drove in this road with huge speed between 9 and 10 o'clock in the evening. And then they stopped the car abruptly here in front of the room where my little girl was. They drove in with a quite bit of speed to create that terrible noise. And then they drove back again. So, and that happened not only once. It didn't happen twice. It happened several times. And I can recall, I would say at least about 10, 12 times. There were times when it happened three evenings in fall, or for them 2 days nothing at all, and so on. So we didn't really know what we have to expect. Stalking is, from my point of view, a crime, especially. If you go after family members, after children, after neighbors, I mean, it's not one neighbor, it's another one, it's another way, down there, everyone. So it's a huge number of people who felt afraid. Just they drove me mad, yeah. I was mad, to be honest. I was mad at certain points in time. Luckily, I wasn't that mad that to take any terrible action and, I'd say, using a gun or anything else. I just thought, if I can stop them here, calling the police, because every time when it happened, the police was unfortunately too late. I prepared a piece of wood, put nails in it, put that on the street, lying in on the meadow there, and waiting until those guys come and pull the piece of wood over the road to hurt their car, to hurt their car. And then that was interesting. I mean, it was interesting that my daughter came and said to me, "Poppy, Papa, Papa, what are you doing here?" And then I said, "Okay, I lost myself again. I'm driven by action, not by logic. Today I know how to drive people mad. Yes. If you do have the money, and put constantly a little bit more pressure here, a little bit more pressure there, on the employees in your office, then on your family, your daughter, then I was close. I mean, I was thinking about suicide. I was thinking about taking action against those stalkers, or taking an action against key people in the bank, because I knew Raymond Bear was behind it. He knew what was going on. I knew Mike Bear was behind it. I knew Thomas Bear. Those were the guys who could have said, we stopped that action. But they must have said, go on. Go on with the action. Make this guy, as I said, the head of resources told me, finish him up.
This intimidation by private detectives took place in 2004 and 2005. At that time, Rudolf Elmer and his family repeatedly filed complaints against X for harassment, but the Zurich prosecutor systematically refused to open an investigation. Rudolf Elmer then responded using the means available to him by sending his data to the Swiss tax authorities and a financial magazine.
The journalist just chose to do nothing. He didn't investigate the data. He just broke the story that the data were stolen, and that's it. Only 4 years later, when a similar CD was handed over to The Guardian, they investigated the data. They wrote about the clients, about high net worth individuals, about tax avoidance, about money laundering. All the things that 2005 weren't done.
A few weeks later, the media group Ragier, which owns Cash, covertly handed a copy of the CD to the bank.
Why did they give the CD to the bank in the first place? I mean, what about the protection of the sources? That's exactly the argument they used, not to hand over the CD to the prosecutor. So, either you protect your sources from the bank and from the prosecutors, or you don't protect your sources, and then you have to hand over the CDs to everybody.
When the cash story broke, Julius Baer filed a complaint against X for breach of banking secrecy. Quickly, things are closing in towards Elmer.
Basically, what happened is I went to work, was called by a policeman, and he told me that something is wrong with my daughter, I should come home quickly. I left the office at 9 in the morning, again back to Freienbach, and then there was the police in my house. They just said they're performing a house search, and they take me now to custody.
After 2 weeks in custody, Rudolf Elmer's lawyer called for his release. The Zurich justice system then produced a document of a dubious nature.
Hello. My name is David Leloup. I am a Belgian journalist. And I am preparing a story about Rudolf Elmer. Do you know Rudolf Elmer?
No.
The prosecutor used your name.
My name is Yolanda.
Yes. To testify against him. You don't know him. Because here it's written that you are his wife.
Nein. I don't know. Yeah, I don't understand it.
It's
my
name, yes,
my name, yeah.
You are not the wife of Rudolf Elmer.
No.
This false evidence against Rudolf Elmer was apparently due to a copy-paste error by the Zurich Department of Justice. It was nevertheless used, along with other arguments, to keep Elmer in custody for another 2 weeks.
After the imprisonment, I had two meetings with the bank, and a representative of the bank made an offer to settle the problem, and it was a payment of around 500,000 Swiss over 5 years, every month a little portion, an installment, and then at the end some lump sum. But basically it meant over 5 years, and the idea was just that I stay quiet for those 5 years. Now what they wanted from me was that that I do accept that agreement, and all the complaints they had against me would be solved.
But Rudolf Elmer saw this offer as a means of buying his silence. So he turned it down and went into exile in Mauritius.
Future crises will identify jurisdictions that fail to cooperate, including tax havens, and take action to defend our financial system.
We have agreed that there will be an end to tax havens that do not transfer information on request. The banking secrecy of the past must come to an end.
Hello, here is Mr. Berger. I would like to have some advice on a trust issue. I'm Swiss-American and need some advice how to set up the structure or move the structure.
Yeah, sure. If you want to give me a better idea of what you're looking for, I can give you some better advice.
Yeah, I do have a Cayman Trust who holds a Swiss account, has a Swiss bank account. I'm a bit afraid of to keep the money in Switzerland. Are there options?
Well, the country that does not cooperate with either Switzerland or the United States, they're very difficult to get any information out of, is Guatemala. They don't share any information based on any tax cases, even if it's criminal.
All right.
So Guatemala is very secure.
But in Guatemala, are there banks like, well, no
known banks like HSBC or call it Credit Suisse or Deutsche Bank?
Yes, there are. There's one bank in particular. I can't give out the name of the bank until you're a paid client, but it's on the same level as HSBC or Credit Suisse. What we need for the bank account would be a notarized copy of your passport.
And would it be possible to have kind of a hold mail agreement with the bank? That, I mean, I don't really want that the information sent out to, let's say, over the bound to another country.
Yeah, no, you're protected by bank privacy laws of Guatemala. It would be illegal for the bank to release any information on you.
All right.
You have all ownership of the company, but the lawyer will appear for you in the public registry.
That's called kind of a nominee, huh, isn't he? And
that's right.
Yeah. All right. That sounds good. Yeah. And how much would it cost such a structure?
We charge $4,000 for the company and the bank accounts in Guatemala.
That's all in all.
All in all.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's very reasonable.
The offshore banking system emerged from the financial crisis stronger than ever. Once again, Rudolf Elmer looked for a way to rock the system.
Mr. Rudy Elmer, please welcome him to discuss his story, his case, and the issues it raises. Thank you, sir.
Good morning. I would like to tell you the short story first about what happened to me, and then the second part will be then about the real matter. Now, the short story is, and it's a very simple one, I was in the Cayman Islands, and there was a kind of a mouse tail. Mouse tail. I started to pull on it a bit, and it got bigger, the tail. It looked like a dragon tail. I went back to Switzerland. I started to pull on it more. I didn't stop. And it got bigger and bigger. It became a dragon. A dragon, a fire-breathing dragon with several heads. And one of the heads was the bank. One was the press, one the Swiss press up to a certain extent. Then the prosecutor. And all were after me and my family to put pressure on us.
Basically, in 2008, having exhausted the routes he sought through the bank and the Swiss courts, Mr. Elmer went to WikiLeaks, Julian Assange. Thank you for coming.
Mr. Elmer has been fighting his case for some 5 years, I believe, to, in one way or another, draw attention to this data. Of course, we don't know whether he is our source or not. We are structured in such a way that we do not know that. However, he certainly has something important and has had something very important to say about this matter. And I understand he is in a position to have more to say and more to give to the world to help them understand these sort of corrupt practices.
This data has been collected due to my whistleblower website having had contacts with other people. I will not reveal any company names. I will not reveal any high net worth riddles. What I want to do is to hand this over to WikiLeaks. And I say that again, WikiLeaks, in order to have it investigated and making a decision on it. It's a similar thing as the first whistleblower letter I wrote.
And together to the front, guys.
I can't say more than that.
The Guardian did mention 40, as many as 40 politicians were possibly involved in this. Can you state that possibly we're talking about 40 politicians?
I made that statement, so I can state it, yes.
the limelight.
In the U.S., more than one in four adults was suffering from a diagnosable mental disorder even before the pandemic. For too long, cost and access barriers to mental health care have caused incalculable suffering. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Lynn Parmore Ryder. This article is titled, "The Pandemic is Exacerbating an Already Dire Mental Health Crisis in U.S." Stay tuned for more. Devastating conditions like major depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and obsessive-compulsive disorder are among the leading causes of disability in established market economies, according to Johns Hopkins Medicine. In the U.S., more than one in four adults was suffering from a diagnosable mental disorder even before the pandemic. For too long, cost and access barriers to mental health care have caused incalculable suffering. COVID has now blown the lid off a crisis building for decades. The Lancet reports that cases of mental disorders have skyrocketed during the pandemic, including 53 million new cases of major depressive disorder and 76 million new cases of anxiety disorders. In the U.S., since the spring of 2020, the National Center for Health Statistics has partnered with the Census Bureau on a new rapid turnaround data system to monitor depression and anxiety, finding that just over half of adults between the ages of 18 and 44 surveyed have reported symptoms, as have 38% of adults living with children. Researchers find that younger adults, racial and ethnic minorities, essential workers, and unpaid adult caregivers, most of them women, have been especially hard hit by mental distress and increased substance use. Growing alcohol use is particularly worrisome among stretched to the breaking point young women juggling children under the age of 5 and work responsibilities. Feedback loops within families mean that distressed parents transfer their anxiety and depression to children and vice versa. Three top U.S. organizations specializing in child and adolescent mental health, including the American Academy of Pediatrics, recently declared a state of emergency for the country's youth, noting that COVID-19 and the ongoing struggle for racial justice have compounded trends of declining mental health among kids observed prior to 2020. Many people in the U.S. find themselves in so much pain they think about dying. Suicide attempts by young girls are notably on the rise. Young people in the U.S. are unable to obtain mental health care and are being sent to hospital emergency rooms where the staff are under their own intense stress due to private equity takeovers of health care and the spillovers of an inadequate care system. Yet, as alarming as it all sounds, signs indicate that the crisis may only intensify. COVID-19 case rates may be falling in some areas, but the stresses associated with the pandemic are far from over, particularly as new variants spread, causing further disruption. In the United States, those needing help face a serious shortage of mental health specialists, themselves often suffering from burnout and stress. A reduced number of psychiatric hospital beds, and a loss of job-based health insurance. Even for those who have insurance, a lack of in-network counselors and therapists mean that care is frequently out of reach. And if you don't live in a city, you may be out of luck. In some states, 80% of the population lives in an area where mental health professionals are scarce. The upshot is that millions are going without the treatment they require. People are unable to sleep, gaining weight, and turning to potentially harmful strategies as they struggle to cope with grief, loss, isolation, family, and workplace stress, and economic woes, including the latest worries about inflation.